I like Pizza Inn because they had the chocolate chip pizza.
Yep.
God, that's
the cinnamon ones are better. If you have the cinnamon ones, they're cinnamon pizza, and it's got the icing drizzle all over it.
Better,
hands down, bar none.
Hands down, bar none.
There's your idiom. bar none is the same thing as no holds barred. It's just an abbreviated form of it.
What does that mean?
No holds barred is a fight where there are essentially no rules. There are no holds that are barred from the fight. You can do whatever you please.
Wow.
Yeah, no holds bar fight. No holds barred. Sorry, I heard myself and it sounded like I said no holds bar, but that's like the, yeah.
This has been Lessons with Lawson.
All right, you want to do the thing?
I don't know.
Did you put a fireball in your mouth and take it out?
Yeah, they get really spicy, dude.
They're called a fireball.
I'm going to put it back in here in a minute. Like, it feels like, I mean, it like eradicates.
Hello. Ah!
Yes. This is how like I wanted my prayer life to be when I was a kid.
This is your conscience.
Like, is this being recorded? Like, is it recording you?
Why is this like the beginning of a
This is what Charles wanted right here. The little drop ins. We all got the headphones for a reason.
But real life,
I don't think it's recorded.
I bet you it is.
Welcome to Products of Grace, the podcast by Mercy Hill Church. My name is Lawson Harlow, and with me today I have Don Terrell and Blake McCullough. So, Don, what are we doing today?
So, today. What are we doing today? Today, we will discuss the title of today's episode is, what do you want the episode to be about?
Apparently, pork barrel.
Pork barrel.
What is a pork barrel?
What is this?
What is a pork barrel? Pork barreling is the utilization of government funds for projects designed to please voters or legislatures and win votes.
So, all of it.
But we're going to use this episode and fill it full of content that will win the hearts and minds of our listening demographic.
Okay.
Heard which it. Is the unemployed 28-year-old man who's living at home with mom and dad.
That's the listening audience.
Oh, wow. That's our key demographic.
Yeah. Good grief.
Actually, when I pull up Anchor.
In a basement that smells like tacos.
Gross.
I've been sleeping in a basement the last 3 days.
Yeah?
It's a bad rap?
It didn't smell like tacos, but we were so cold. Like, every night we went to bed, I was like, it is freezing in here. And today when I was packing up my suitcase, I noticed that all of the air vents were closed.
Oh, no. That's what those
I was
for.
Like, am I going to tell Sarah or am I just going to?
Did you?
I told her.
What'd she say?
She was like, are you me. Serious?
Was it damp?
No. They had like some heavy duty dehumidifiers rolling though.
So. Oh, here it is. Audience. All right.
Oh, but it's good because our children slept down there and they didn't know that it was morning and they slept so much later.
I bet.
They slept past 8 every day.
You need to get blackout curtains.
I know we do.
Wouldn't you say that has to do with daylight savings though too?
I don't know.
Daylight savings time.
They woke up. They woke up
right
on Sunday.
Me too, dude. I woke up. So on daylight savings time, I fell asleep at like 2. And I was like, I just laid there. Like, there were 2 nights in a row. I did everything I could to fall asleep. The next night, I got 2 hours of sleep because everything happened.
Jake told me.
I told him about it?
Yeah. I heard.
I started every meeting with, hey, just so you know, you're getting 2 hours of sleep, Lawson. So, we'll see how this goes.
Mine was, I woke up on Sunday morning, and it was
8:45.
Which was really...
9:45.
No, it was really 7.
That's right.
7. That's the game that I play.
Me too, for the first like month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not really 4:42 right now.
Yeah.
It's 3:42 where the Products of Grace lives.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Oh, the age of our listening audience is per Anchor. Is there a ring? What was that?
I think Charles got a phone call or something.
Oh. 0 to 17, 4%. 18 to 22, 19%. 23 to 27, 31%.
Hey.
28 to 34, 16%. 35 to 44, 19%.
Really?
45 to 59, 10%. 60 plus, less than 1%.
Wow.
I know. Come on, elder folk.
But what percentage of 60 plus people are listening to podcasts? Any podcasts?
Yeah, that's fair.
But what if you had a podcast that was your demographic? Like, what is, like, if you got to have a podcast out there that they're congregating around, like a school of fish.
I don't know.
What bait do
we
draw?
I would bet that it's normative news outlets.
Or sports.
Yeah, I could see it being ESPN or like.
Sports that doesn't talk about.
I thought
betting.
It was going to be like the crocheting hour. Welcome.
Well, you just alienated the less than 1% of our listeners here in the category.
All right, so you wanted to get the gender breakdown?
Please.
Anchor says.
There's literally going to be another category in there. There's only two.
No, there's actually four. Actually four categories here. Male, female, not specified, and non-binary. The good news is is like a negative one.
Oh, good.
Good. They don't exist.
Good.
Literally. Male is 64%. Female, 35%.
That's
interesting.
You think that tracks?
Yeah, it tracks.
Why do you say that?
Because I think that we have a lot of men
who listen on their, I think that most of them listen
living on their drive, yeah. Whose wives do not care about this program.
What could we do? I mean, again, this episode needs to be about, I mean, do you want to solidify our base?
Or grow it?
Or do you want to grow it?
I want to grow it.
Okay. Let's play A and B. If you were going to solidify the base, what do you think the content would consist of?
I don't know what you mean.
Like, if you were going to go hard,
lean in into the 64%,
and try to dominate, what do you think the topic would be?
I don't know. I think I'd just keep doing what I've been doing.
Yeah, I think
what has worked.
Yeah.
I would think it would just be the quintessential I Have Friends episode. I think that's what it is. They love.
That's what they want from us.
Right.
Did the statistics bear that out? I thought the Q&A are the highest. Or Bethel and cigarette vending machines.
That episode actually, well, let's finish my game. If you were going to go and try to gain listeners, specifically women.
I don't play this game.
Why?
I just don't. I don't have a category for this. I just...
Why isn't it even 50-50? You think it's because we are men?
No, because I think the actual demographic of podcast listeners is exponentially men.
Really?
Yeah. Like in general. I'll look it up, but... What? Because I heard this.
Joe Rogan.
Because it's, holy moly. Because I can tell you his.
Sheesh.
So, male listeners outweigh the female counterpart with a share of 53%. So, in general, males listen 53% over and against whatever.
47.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're higher than the mean because ours is what?
Yeah, but
65, is that what you said?
Yeah.
I think so.
Good gravy. I feel like we got a lot of single guys who listen to the podcast.
Hence the
where I'm a single fellas at.
Yep. Yeah.
Or what if?
Uh-oh.
What if there are couples listening to the podcast together?
Ooh.
On the husband's
account.
Ooh. Yeah, because like, that's what my family does.
Yeah, I was gonna say I know people who store up podcast episodes, and when they go on a trip, they listen to
just
them the whole way down.
The fury.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the top 10 episodes. That's another update. So at one point, Bethel Music and Cigarette Vending Machines was tied with Lust Leads to Death.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was for 1 week. And then all of a sudden, Bethel Music and Cigarette Vending Machines broke loose again. It's still our all-time number one. 321 listens. Lust Leads to Death is 319. What's behind door number one is 313.
Charles, mute your mic.
Sorry.
Just the Two of Us remix, the Q&A, 298, Preterisms, Preterism, and other music.
That one got 292. That one got referenced in a couple of years.
Listen to this,
videos.
Man.
Here's, that's a Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the more recent ones, Crying Unto God, Anxiety, 287.
Wow. Mm.
That one's pretty recent. Like, yeah. It shot up there. What is the Gospel? An Episode Worth Sharing, 286. Ordinary and Faithful, 285. Thankful for Them Singles, 285. Oh, that's Todd. Interesting. Corn, Crown, and Martyrs, the Blake episode, 285. It's Blake! Those are the things I remember. And further updates, in addition to us getting headphones, how do you feel about the statement, winter is a result of the fall?
This is just a state of the podcast address, and I appreciate it.
Good.
Winter is a product of the fall?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if I would abide.
I thought y'all were in agreement on that. I'm against that statement. I love winter.
Yeah, I
know you love winter.
I know. I wasn't speaking of do I like it or not.
I mean, I loved when my dog died.
Yeah, I tell people that. I tell people that story sometimes. I really do.
Like, I get it.
So
I sympathize with you.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal. But plant. But so
Blake has lost it.
So if plant death is not a moral evil, which it is not, it is categorically not. Mm-hmm. I don't know why the season that would end the plant life would be a product of the fall. That's what it does. It ends plant life, at least for a time. They're not necessarily killing it altogether.
But I mean, do you think winter happened in the garden?
I don't think a sufficient enough time passed, likely. I also think where it is in the world may have been, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, by your argument, though, I think that summer probably wouldn't have happened. Like, I think, in my mind, 75 degrees and sunny was the demeanor of the garden.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's where I'm at.
But you make an argument there that wouldn't carry over altogether anyway, because you argue for you're a time bubble boy.
Yeah, I'm a perpetual state.
Yeah, you're a time bubble boy is what we call you.
Serenity.
Well, I think I think there's a lot of argument like that goes for this. I think so. Hold on. I keep touching your feet. I'm sorry. I'm not even newly. I think my category to build out there is that the garden was obviously a unique place.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. The question is, what's its uniqueness? Right. Like, yeah, but the purpose of it was that it would expand.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It would expand and it would essentially take over the whole world should Adam have fulfilled the covenant, but he failed. Mm-hmm. Yes, there was a garden covenant. but I think that Genesis actually tells us that he gives, hold on a minute.
Oh, times and seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. So the seasons are intact.
Wait, read it. Don't let me rob you from that.
Okay. So I got to.
Don't do that. The people
hate
don't
your
want
searching
that.
Sounds.
I know it.
Don't tell me what I am.
That was me, actually.
Yeah, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens and separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth. So the purpose of the sun and the moon were to not only give signs of seasons, but I think even create the seasons. That there would be.
The other thing is that Christ mentions you can tell the seasons by something. He's like, you, and so it'll be with the coming of the signs
of the times is what he's making reference to.
But he's using when things are about to give fruit or when the leaves.
Oh yeah, yeah. Drink, you can tell the seasons by these things. Yes. Yeah. So it is. You can tell the signs of the times. Yeah.
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 With the coming of the Son of Man.
Right. Right.
The question is. Is him making all things new a recreation or a total, am I saying that right? Or a total.
Oh, when he makes all things new, is it a restoration or a recreation?
Yes, those are the questions. Because that would be, then the question is, in the end, in the new heavens and new earth,
yeah,
where there is no sun, there is no moon, there is no darkness, what should the soul there long for? Obviously, Christ is the center of our attention there,
right.
But there are some peripheral realities that we can juggle here. Mm-hmm. It would be, what would be the perpetual, is there a perpetual quote unquote season? I find myself.
Oh, I see what you're saying. There is no reference in Revelation that would lead us to believe that there are seasons, but I don't know why we would assume that there would not be. The question, I guess, at that point has to be, are the seasons, I don't think the seasons are a part of the curse. I think the seasons are part of creation and that.
But they bear the curse.
They certainly are subject to futility.
I mean, winter obviously is super severe. Like all of the evergreens lost their leaves.
This year?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to replant all of my shrubs.
Yeah, actually, Beth told me that I'm probably going to have to yank up the, what are they called? Boxwoods?
She just wants to get rid of them.
I want
to
get rid of them too, bro. So I don't care. I hate them.
I think they're dead. Why are they turning green?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because they're dead.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're wanting evidence. You to dig them up.
Yeah, that's they're asking, please.
All right, so in the end, what do you think?
No,
just speculation, conjecture.
Just speculation, conjecture.
Yeah. Lawson said.
I'm like in my brain, I'm trying to think through Revelation rapidly. I don't think that there's any reason to assume that there will be seasons. No, I'm sorry. There is no explicit statement that there will not be seasons. However, the book of Revelation does strictly identify things that will not be present any longer, mm-hmm. and it does not include seasons. That being said, I'm going to say that there will be seasons.
That there will be seasons?
There will be seasons.
Because snow.
Because it's not included in the list of things.
Snow's going to be there?
I think snow is a demonstration of God's glory.
Will you? Yeah.
Here's where I'm at.
Okay, let's hear this.
I think we're going to be cultivators in the new heavens and new earth.
I'm here for this.
We affirm.
And thus, there will be seasons. I think without their harshness, there mm-hmm. will be a time with, as the weapons of war turn into plows, mm-hmm. there will be times of planting and times of harvest.
Oh,
times
I can get there with this.
Yeah.
Times of cultivating. There won't be weeds, right? But you will still care for the gardens in some way or care for the things. And a time of celebration where
the seasons have come to. Yeah, and it's come to a point of rest.
Yeah.
Right. And I think if you think about it from an agricultural standpoint, the times of winter are there. You're not planting. You're not harvesting. The seasons have passed. And essentially, this is a period of no planting, no harvesting.
But I also think, and I see the argument, that there could be no change at all in the atmosphere and all of those things, because it's a perfect place, could just happen however. So I get the other side of that.
What? That
like that,
there's that it's a recreation.
Harvest and cultivation and planting don't have to happen in what we would consider like a
normative four
autumn,
seasons.
A spring. You know, I just don't think that's necessary.
That's fair.
Because it's perfect.
I'm hard pressed to believe, but I mean, we say this, but like even rain is ultimately a product of the fall.
Yeah, it's judgment.
Yes, it was. It's not anymore. You know, interesting. It starts out as judgment, but in the New Testament, it's considered mercy, which is a really interesting development, because it starts as this is judgment against the world, to now it's God's goodness is displayed by the fact that the rain falls on the just and the unjust, which is a huge distinction if you carry that forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where'd you get that shirt at?
Carver. Carver gave me the shirt.
That was your Christmas
shirt. Hey, it's that new material,
was,
guys.
It was,
it's
but I'll tell material. You, I was actually...
I don't even remember.
It's a sweatshirt.
A sweat.
You're going to call it suede?
No, it's like a sweatshirt button down.
Yeah, it really is.
And you said your dad calls it the... There was some jersey and...
I don't know.
And a t-shirt.
Carver.
Shirtsy?
A shirtsy.
That's what Sarah's dad called a jersey t-shirt.
Oh. Carver.
So we coined a name that came for this material.
Sweating down.
What's funny is like I started this day and Beth was like, it's going to be cold today. So I put this on and I didn't realize how hard of a commitment I was making when I put this on, because the temperature.
You were in a fleece blanket, my boy.
So like literally as I, like we were going over the sermon with them this morning and I'm standing there and like, this is 5 minutes in, I'm sweating and I'm like, I have made an error today. But I mean, you live with it. It's like, this is where I am. I'm not going home. So
that shirt should be the material. Well, it should be the style that has the buttons under it. Like, you know, the onesie. Like that's what that reminds
me of. So it stays tucked in all the time.
Yes. Tight too.
Tight.
Thin. It would be, it'd be really good for your, Is it a silhouette? What are we talking about?
Figure?
Your figure. What's another word for figure? Starts with an S.
Silhouette.
Silhouette, actually.
That's
Whoa, bro.
That's going to bother me.
Okay.
That's so, like a musical instrument.
All right, so what's next? Nope, we're not doing this. Nope. Nope.
I thought we were going to say, like,
on products of grace.
Nope.
We've got headphones. All right, what are we doing? What's next?
Oh, spring is sprung. How do you feel about spring? Is it a season that you're for?
I don't care.
That's weird.
Well, you just imported you about this everything. Whole thing into the new heavens and new earth.
I know, but I don't have a. I really don't have a preferential season. I would say that my allergies normally act up really bad in the fall, not in the spring. I don't know why that is. That's strange.
Probably more.
It's like when it's when harvest comes in, like when people start harvesting. Dust. Yeah, just terrible. So I don't have a particular preference. I like how happy my family is during the spring.
When is your family happiest?
Summer.
Yeah, same for me.
The moment that pool opens, bro, my household becomes a much warmer place.
And you can put the top down on the Mercedes.
I know.
You've
even cared. Gonna say that's when I open the other garage up, I back the bins out, I'm constantly cleaning it, I wax that joker. It's the best date.
Boy was texting, he didn't hear any of that.
None of it.
That's accurate, actually. I was reading a text message. Like,
what are y'all talking about? Nothing, just Mercedes.
I just assume that it's a shot at me.
What about your family, Blake?
Well, I'm like Lawson. I deal with allergies about 10 months out of the year. So
man can't breathe.
I really love
364 days out of the year.
January and February when everything's dead. But no, I mean, I think spring, I love hate, you know, like I hate pollen. Mm-hmm. I love the sun being out longer.
Mm-hmm.
I hate. That's the only thing I hate about spring. But I think summer, yeah, is probably my favorite. But there's like, I love the anticipation of summer. And I think that's why spring matters to me.
It's a season of anticipation.
I was telling Sarah, spring, besides summer break, obviously, spring break's my favorite school break because it's like you go back and it's a joke. You know, it's like, it's
everybody's summer break's right around the corner. Out.
You know, we're on the way out.
Do you think anticipation is a lost appreciation, like a lost art, if you will?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, like, I used to be afraid. I love anticipation so much.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be afraid of the new heavens and the new earth because I was like, what is there to anticipate when everything is perfect?
Wow.
Perfection is to anticipate.
No, I agree now. I'm saying, like, growing up, that was like one of my biggest, like.
Well, I remember a friend of mine, no joke, we were talking about eternity. And we're driving. I can't tell you where I was. So like Grenada Lake has a levee, right, that you drive over. And then there's like the other side of it, which is dry ground. And it leads into a park. And we were driving on that road and we're talking about eternity. Literally, this man pondering eternity vomits.
Wait, what?
He literally threw up. I kid you not, he threw up. He made me stop. He got out of the car and he vomited.
Lost himself on the timeline.
He literally vomited.
Yeah.
But
think that's the craziest feeling though.
Yeah, so
like when you start talking about eternity and you get untethered from like the timeline and you're like, bro,
where am I?
Yeah, you just start twitching. You're like, geek.
But here's what
I used to just be sitting on the lawnmower like in middle school and high school and just be like gone, heart racing, like
off the timeline
forever.
This is so crazy,
but I can't even use that word.
Okay, I've never. All right, so I said so when I was preaching through John 5. In John 5, were you here in John 5?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So in John 5.
I don't know. I think that's right when I got here.
Yeah, so it was it was after. It was right. The first sermon I preached after we got back from Together for the Gospel that I met you at was John 5:1.
Okay.
I preached the narrative of the invalid. But in that next section where Jesus is making reference to calling people out of the grave and then. He does it twice, right? Where he calls people out of the tomb, all who here live. And then the second time, which he calls everyone out, period. No ifs, no ands, no buts. And they're raised unto everlasting life or to everlasting death. But it's either everlasting or eternal, but it's the same word. And I remember, like, the sermon I preached there is eternal is the most terrifying modifier that exists. Mm-hmm. The only point in which you can find yourself rejoicing in the phrase eternal is when life is supplied on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. So Beth and I were talking about this two or three nights ago, where, like, I used to, like, struggle with the concept of eternal because, I mean, goodness, when you're young, especially, you don't have the concept of a decade.
Yeah.
And you're trying to figure out a concept of eternality. Mm-hmm. But Beth and I were talking, and as we were
without using time.
Yeah, you don't get to. There's technically, I mean, there is no.
That's when the brain breaks.
But the whole thing. But see, I don't know. I think our category of time includes ceasing. We are making our way towards an end.
Yeah, it includes order.
Yeah, yes, but the order doesn't change. For instance, there's still going to be motion. There's still going to be passing. There's still going to be there's going to be a period.
When I say order, I mean order of events.
Exactly. It's still linear, right? When we say God,
sequential,
right. So when we say God is eternal and omnipresent in particular, the omnipresence concept means that he is actively involved in every moment that is past, that is present, that is future, right? Mm-hmm. And that he knows those as if, I mean, we're playing with the knowledge of God at that point, but he knows them to such a degree that we can't even fathom. But in eternity, there will be a moment, for instance, let's say that in eternity, Don and I are plowing said field. There's going to be a moment where that field that has been worked will be harvested. And it's not as though the linearness of it is altered. It's still going to be brought to fruition, but there is no end. The end is
more life.
Exactly. And so going back to what I was saying, Beth and I were talking about this, and there's such a sweetness about this, mm-hmm. because like having somewhat of a more built out category of time or a more experienced category of time, even though I mean, you know, we're 32 and 31. So the concept of a decade, we kind of have a grasp on, especially as we're watching our children grow up. But like the reality that we get to go and we get to enjoy Christ and enjoy fellowship with him and his people, mm-hmm. in a way that even our best foretaste here are mm-hmm. incredibly lacking. And I think the two things that have helped us is age, and the other thing that's helped us is having a deeper understanding of worship. So like gathering together with the saints now, there's such a sweetness about it where I think that if you consider worship forever and you're in a lackluster environment of worship, I don't have a better way to say that, like that doesn't have that sweetness, it becomes terrifying. But once you have the sweetness attached to it, it's like, give me all that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I think it flows out of, sometimes we compartmentalize it. I think then it flows out to doing all things mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in that spirit of worship to mm-hmm. his glory. And so then it mm-hmm. expands. Because I think for me, like a lot of times I was thinking about eternity doing one thing categorically as it's I
singing.
Understand
it. You're
worship,
singing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it expands.
Yeah.
So that way we get to speculate to be like, we will be worshiping all the time.
Yeah.
The question is, how is that displayed?
Yeah. One of my favorite questions is, did we talk about this? Will there be exploration?
We've talked about that. We're not going to cover it. I have another question.
Okay. I'm sorry.
What do you think about the statement?
I'm sweating.
Sometimes we have need to be thankful for what isn't.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
What do you think about that? Because I think it's like the anticipation sometimes is like a lost art of like, and we're always wanting it to live in the now, and we don't think about being thankful for
what is not.
Right. And the anticipation and the hope that that moment will come to pass, we'll be able to celebrate that. But then too, like I sometimes find myself never stopping and thinking and being thankful about what isn't. I'm only categorically thankful for what is. And that's a super shallow view of being glad-hearted and thankful.
Well, it's a whole category you're missing.
Yeah. Why is that? Fill it up.
I just think about the things that I was rescued from.
Same.
And like the trajectory that I was on before Christ saved me. Mm. And then just to think about like even the small kindnesses, like Sarah and I were talking this week and she said, like, I'm really glad that I married you and not someone else. And I was like, Me too. You know, like there's like that to think about, like all of the things that took place for the two of us to come together, and like all the other directions.
I'm sorry.
That it could have gone, like, and it didn't. Praise the Lord. You know, I don't know. Just think about that is a kindness from the Lord to be reminded of.
Yeah,
I always think about it in the sense of Job. And not having calamity. You know what I'm saying? And how often we take for granted the daily peace that we have until it's gone. You know what I'm saying? Until it's gone. Yeah. And how shallow my thankfulness is when I'm actually living in peace. You know what I'm saying? Like when it's like, was Job more thankful for what he was restored to have post learning the absence of all of those things? Like I think about, like I've never been to St. Jude, you know what I'm saying? Like, but I mean, to know that that was part of your life, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think we have to have those experiences to appreciate the fact that, that those types of things I've never dealt with or wrestled with. But at the same time, like, had they been apportioned to me on the other side of that, knowing that the Lord uses all things together for good, would I be thankful for it?
Yeah.
And you would be. It's, to me, blows my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, you know, I think sometimes you're pulled out of it, like you're placed in positions that make you more grateful for what you perhaps were ignorant of originally. All right. So story from third grade Lawson. I'll never forget this, bro. This was irony. Third grade Mathathon. Do you remember Mathathon?
Yeah.
What was Mathathon for?
Don't put me on the spot.
Mathathon was to raise money for St. Jude.
Oh, ours was for the American Heart Association.
So ours was to raise money for St. Jude.
Yours was trash.
Yeah, yours was trash, actually. Yeah. So ours was the, I don't know if I've ever told anybody this.
I'm telling everybody now.
Yeah, so.
Possibly 287 of your
classes. Yeah, that's right. Mathathon.
65% men.
To put this into perspective, Mathathon is 1998.
The 90s were good, baby.
1998.
Yeah, they were.
Okay. Oh, no, it'd have been 99, I think. So, even 1999, I am sitting in Mathathon. I didn't do a single problem in Mathathon.
What? You're a rebel.
Listen. And this is what I said, and I said it out loud.
Oh, no.
I said, I don't know why I'll ever need those dollars.
Sheesh.
Judgment, bro.
No, I know. Nine-year-old Lawson.
Bro.
Is 100% like I remember. I can tell you who I said it to.
This too Sheesh. Shall come to pass.
And I said it, and two years later, almost on the
dot. Did anybody look at you like you were wild?
No, bro. We're 9 years old. We're all bigger than life, right? Like
teacher would be like, cross your eyes. If you do that, it'll stay there.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch what you say.
Yeah. I remember when I realized my face wouldn't stick that way. But I remember saying that, and. That has stuck with me forever. It's like, close your mouth. But there are so many things in which like I remember being diagnosed. I remember thinking about that moment, and on the other side of like, on the other side of healthy, there's two thoughts that runs through your mind, which is, man, how grateful am I? Even as a pagan, as an unbeliever, like how grateful am I? That my life was spared. And then even more so, like I'm grateful for that my life was spared, but then also have such gratitude that there was not so much damage done to my body that I couldn't, I was not able to do things that God has been gracious to let me do, but in things that are not, you know, I'm grateful for infertility. And so, like, you know, I think some people really struggle with being grateful for the trials and tribulations. Like, there are certainly things that are not because of things that have occurred in my life. And you can sit there and say all day long, but my way was better. It's not. It's not better. Like, is in a perfect world, would there be infertility? Nope. But in God's perfect providence and design, that's where you are. And so there is a point in which we should be just flat grateful. And so Beth and I, we were away from our children for a couple of days. So we like had just ample time to talk through some things. But in that conversation, you know, I asked Beth, I said, do you struggle? Like, are you upset that pregnancy probably is never happening? And she was like, not with two beautiful children, I'm not. And I think, you know, there's just a point of gratitude that overcomes a bitter heart. And that's universal. Like, normally if I'm looking at someone who has a root of bitterness, it is almost always intrinsically correlated to they are ungrateful. And you know, you might respond, there's nothing to be grateful for. I'm like, bro, Jesus died on the cross and rose from the dead that you could eternally live with him. Like, until you can disprove this category, you can't look at me and tell me there's nothing to be grateful for.
Yeah, and to use the breath that he gave you to say
there's nothing to be thankful for. Yeah.
Yeah, because in the same way, like, you could sit here and say, like, you could have a shallow thankfulness in the gospel. Because in one category that stands, a lot of people don't deal with, is he would have been just to condemn us all.
Absolutely. And
our condemnation being just in Christ, satisfied and completely paid in full, but yet absent of the cross and the ministry of Christ and his death, burial, and resurrection and him drinking the cup of God's wrath, he would have been, in fact, just to condemn us all. And so being thankful, just being flat thankful, that wasn't the reality. I mean, that is the reality absent Christ.
And I would say, I'm really not being hyperbolic, but I imagine someone's going to take me that way. I really don't know if there is a point in which any Christian, and what I'm saying is, like, moments of life where at the end they should not be thankful. And I know that's a lot, because I'm sure there's 30 people, but this, and this. Okay. But do we believe the promises of God? Like, at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves the question, do we believe the promises of God? Do we uphold the fact that God, in the midst of even the most tragic and horrendous situations, and I'm sure you can list thousands upon thousands, that even in the midst of those, God is actively working together for your sanctification? Like, if we uphold that as the chief end of man, right, to glorify God and enjoy him forever, then there has to be a means by which we look back at everything and say, you know, that hurt, but praise be to God, his providence is right and good. And so I think, and that's not to say that we look back on sin and call it good.
Right.
That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying that we look at those things with a biblical lens and we say, oh, even in the midst of that sinful activity, right, God was good. He was redeeming it. And we really have got to be able to reclaim those things, because if we don't, We're living with one eye blind. Like, we have biblical realities that we should be looking through, and instead we take the moment of our life and we drag it back and say, well, how am I to think about this? But we almost always exclude biblical truth in the midst of it, and feelings tend to rule in the midst of that.
I have a random question. What do you feel about, Blake, I'll ask you first.
All right.
What do you feel about your kids are acting up in the grocery store and you tell a complete stranger, and you're talking to your kid, and if you don't act right, you're going to go home with them? I've seen parents do this.
I'm probably not doing that.
No, I'm not doing it either.
Yeah, I'm not doing
it. I wanted to talk about, like, why we wouldn't do that.
Because, sorry, I'll let Blake go.
So the first part of this.
Never mind.
People are going to not like you eating the ice.
Right.
There's ice for y'all.
And by people, he means Julie.
Yeah. Shout out.
That's all right.
He's putting it down now.
I'm going to pick it back up in a minute. Yes. Go, Blake.
All right. So, I lost my train of thought. So, I don't know, man.
Like, using the innocence of a stranger to threaten your children.
That's not my biggest issue with it.
First of all,
that's not your biggest
issue.
No,
not at all. The biggest issue, I think, is that what that shows is in your own heart, your fear of man, that the people around are, like, judging your parents.
Well, I'm totally off of your, yeah.
I think that, like, to me,
say
that's
this
the bigger,
again.
Like, it shows fear of man to be obviously everyone around here is judging me. Let me, like, throw this off and, like, make the kid out to be the bad guy, right? Which, I mean, they're sinners, of course. My other problem with it is something that I think, I don't know, I deal with not only as a parent, but as a teacher. And it's like that your children often will act better when they know that they're safe with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
like I think that there's like a reality that you if they
did somebody
secure,
look at you in the grocery store and tell you their children were going home. Sorry, I was trying to.
I've witnessed this.
If you feel secure,
yeah,
as a child, then you're more likely to get in line. If that makes sense, I don't know.
That's where I am. I think the primary point is the point of discipline actually should secure your child's position as your child, not undermine it. Now, the catch 22 here is, was he just being funny?
Like, bro, my parents worked for a nonprofit growing up that
you ate
took care of kids whose parents could not. And they had friends who, this one particular friend who at one point packed a bag for her daughter.
Whoa.
And drove, like, all as a show for the daughter. Like, drove
like
to the place.
Like a scare tactic.
Yes. And I'm just like, bro, like, this is not the way. What got you to this point?
Yeah, this is not the way.
What got you here?
The spirit is bad.
Well, I mean, I actually, now that you say that, like, I know people who are like,
like, the police station, folks will do that. Like,
put them in lock.
I'm going to take you to jail.
Now, that might be different.
That one might have happened to me. I thought that one was reasonable. It was like, you're a moron. And I'm going to show you what happens to people. And the whole thing was,
this is where you're headed.
I disrespected a police officer.
Okay, yeah.
And
no, I'm not giving it the fraternal order of police. I'll never have to deal with you.
That was not the issue.
And little did I know.
Oh, man.
That's good. There was something else I wanted to ask you all.
Here's a question. Okay. So, y'all know in Tennessee, you can get a ticket from a red light camera.
Yes.
But
I've heard the but before. Tell us.
You're not legally
obligated
to pay it.
Are we?
Do you pay it or no?
Are you confident about this?
I've seen a video of a state legislator saying they have no teeth in.
Well, I've heard
requiring.
So what I've heard is it's to a contractor, which is not a law enforcement agency.
Yeah.
So they're just a subcontractor to be a ticketing agency. The only way that it can catch up with you is at a court date.
Oh, like for something else?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And you also have, sir. Some tickets.
Here's 36.
$50 a piece.
And this, they get you in 4K. Like, they got
getting
your,
you $50 a piece. That's when you're like $200 a pop.
You think?
I know.
So, do you pay them?
I've never gotten ticketed that way. I will say my dad contested it one time.
To me, it's a conscience issue for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay him.
He was like, that wasn't me. And they sent him back a picture of him driving. And he was like, all right. And so he said he paid
him. So I got one from Christmas Eve. There was ice on the ground.
Dude, get out of that ice.
There was ice on the ground.
People don't like this.
They don't. Quit chewing your gosh.
Put the thing down. You can give the people an hour.
We're giving the people the episode that they want.
I want a better question.
All right.
Golly, on Blake's head.
I'll shut up.
That wasn't your question.
Yes, it was.
About the ticket?
The traffic ticket?
That was your question?
Brother was texting the whole time.
I want a better question, yeah.
All right. Well, supply it.
I don't know.
Hot rod. What's a question? What is a question? You don't have anything?
I wrote down questions.
You did?
We just got a question, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, what's the question? I never got that.
No, I don't want to do that one.
Okay, never mind.
Hold on. I don't want to encourage him.
Oh.
That's where I am.
Mm. Wow.
I mean, obviously, it's a joke. I wrote down a couple of questions because I had lunch with...
What about the question?
What was this question?
Yeah, I have it on here. Herding cats.
Yeah.
Oh, getting your family to church?
Yeah.
Let's do that one.
I love how he said his name.
Oh, sorry.
Charles, you're going to need to bleep that one, brother.
Really?
I don't know.
Why can't it be associated to him?
I don't know.
Why don't we just...
Talking about people's heads. Hey, family.
Oh. We are out of control. We are 100% out of control. Here was my question, actually.
We're not going to deal with that.
We can if you want to.
How do you get your kids?
I actually feel like that's a reasonable like whole.
Yeah, like, episode.
Yeah, I think there's a parenting episode that would be good.
I do think so.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. This is a good one. If you could do one thing different in your spiritual life, like, and I mean earlier on, like let's say first 3 years of being converted, you cannot say be a part of a healthy church.
Oh my goodness, dude.
Because that's everybody's answer and it's the appropriate answer. But if you could do one thing different in your first 3 years of being a Christian, what would it be? The answer is, there is an answer to this question. The answer is you should be a member of a healthy church, but...
I know. As soon as he took that off the table, my
brain it wasn't going to... It's not a fun question at that point because there is a correct answer, but I'm saying your own soul, like...
I was going to say.
Okay.
Say it, huh? Well, when I went away to college, I didn't understand the value of a local church.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too.
I mean,
the centrality of the local church compared to individualism.
Like I was out on like leave. I took leave of the church.
Oh, when you went to college?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'll just go to church when I come home.
But you never came home.
Right. And then I totally, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I was going to say anything that I would do different, there's plenty of things I would have done different spiritually in that season. Sin has consequences. And so, but to me, the cure to all of that would be my faithfulness, and I needed to be in, and I would say, like, when we say, here, I'll give you this, the more I come to appreciate and love Christ Church, the more I understand relationally through both passive and active accountability.
Mm.
Of interpersonal relationships and bearing one another's burdens and being encouraged by one another. It's not one of, I think even right now, like it strikes probably a lot of our listeners, or maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm alone in this. When we say the church, I think church on Sunday mornings.
Okay, that's fair.
Because even in my language, I was like, okay, well, yeah, I would just go to church when I came home.
Yeah.
But that's such a shallow definition of church. Like, yes, that is one. The gathering of the saints on Sunday is
paramount.
Yeah, core to what we do.
Yeah.
But there's so much that flows throughout the week.
Yeah.
That's, not corporate.
Fair.
You know what I'm saying? But just being together.
Yeah.
And I think that's what. So it's not even like absent the centrality of local church. It's like not even understanding the value of being a part of the local church.
Fair.
Bro, all I can hear is your nostrils.
I know. Big old hairballs in them.
Stop it.
He's just trying to suck wind and get oxygen in his lungs. It's a forest in there.
Golly. Blake, answer the question.
I already, that was my answer.
That's
too.
That's the answer too.
Literally just, like, I literally can't, like, all I can think of, what, because, like, I got saved.
I would eat more popcorn.
Maybe, nothing, bro. Maybe, like, more transparency with the people that who are discipling me. I don't know. Like, but other than that, I mean, I think it was like, because I was being discipled, it was like, I needed to see the beauty of the church as a whole.
Yeah. Same. I'm back.
All right.
What about you, Lawson? And you can't say anything about the local church. I mean, it's like the whole answer implodes on itself.
Right.
It's a whole house of cards. It goes crashing down. I'm just filling time so you can think of something.
No, I have one.
Oh.
I have one.
Teach us, Sage One.
I would have...
Because we didn't answer the question right.
I didn't say that you didn't answer the question right. I said that there is an appropriate answer to the question. The appropriate answer to the question is... That
yes.
But then from there, is there anything else?
Yeah, like so I'm impressed that you have something else to say, that you have an alternative view. So I was saying, teach me.
The reason I asked the question is because of the subject that was brought up. I think that if there was one thing I could have done to mature myself more quickly in the Lord, it would have been to obey my parents better.
Shoot. Straight up.
Because I grew up, you know, with like, I kind of have a broad, right, parental unit because I have two sets, if you will. And like, if I would have obeyed and aimed to honor them more, I think I would have both obeyed the Lord more faithfully and I would have honored the Lord more faithfully. But you see, but here's what's interesting. In both of these categories, it's simply looking at the institutions that God set up and said, you know what? I think those are important. That's what I was thinking of. Because the one time, did I ever tell you the story about the, I reached a point in my life where I was just decided that if my mom says something dogmatically, I'm like, okay. And it was, I'm going to see if I get myself in trouble here.
Connie. Get him, Connie.
Well, she did. And I'm very grateful. Speaking of things that are not, that I'm grateful for. I was dating this young lady. And my mom, this is one of those like really strange moments. My mom comes into my office at First Baptist Grenada and says, "Hey, I need to talk to you." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." Very strange moment as my mom is sitting in my office and she says, "This isn't her."
Oh, this isn't her.
This
isn't the one.
This ain't it.
Sheesh.
And I said, "Okay."
Yeah, that ain't gonna work out.
I literally I said, "Okay," and I broke up with that girl that day. And out of all the moments in my life, it's like I remember thinking in that moment, she was absolutely right. Not only was she absolutely right, she just saved me probably months of my life.
Yeah,
a lot of dollars.
Just in dollars, time, energy, and gave me, both saved me time and gave me time because she saved me time acting a fool.
Made you a rich man too.
Made me a rich man.
Yay!
And sent me.
That'll preach.
And then she sent me, she was like, "Now, Beth." And I was like.
And sent you on the mission?
Sent me back.
Sent you on mission?
100%. That's a real story.
Gave you a white shirt and some blue pants?
Yeah, blue jeans.
You look nice.
But for real, like I think there's a recognition of the institutions that God set up, and in those recognitions, it's like, hey, like it literally promises you'll have a better life.
Right.
Like it just says that. And so it's like, take that one to the bank. Just take it to the bank and go do the thing. That was my category.
Here's my maybe the last question.
All right.
It's March. Spring has sprung.
Yeah.
We're marching through the Psalms.
Okay.
Hear me, Mercy Hill, when I ask this, okay? Don't. I hope nobody beats me up.
No, they're going to beat you. I'm going to beat you up about it. Yeah.
Does it feel weird walking through the Psalms? That we're doing the Psalms? Yeah. Anybody else? I mean, I've talked to a couple of people. It's like, yeah, first time. It's like. I was turning to Romans just habitually, like it tried to creak itself.
You want to just start over? You want to start Romans over?
Yeah, but that would have been weird no matter what we did.
Yeah, there's no win.
There's no win.
Yeah,
there's no
win.
We could
have done a little topical survey.
But I want to get down in it and say, like, why? Like, why is that? Is it just because like
half these folks hadn't heard anything else from us?
I know, dude.
I mean, that's part of it.
No, it's more than half.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is a large chunk of people. It's not more than half. A large. Chunk of people.
I don't know, man.
I think we were running like 90.
It might be the same demographic on
that's a Drew Thomas question. We'll ask
him. Running around 90 when we started Romans.
Yeah.
Well, considering that the sermon that I preached, that sermon, there were 200 people here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Love being right.
It feels good. But I mean, just trying to get into the thought process about like why does it? I mean, it's blessing me. Mm. I love the Psalms.
Mm-hmm. It's I'm pumped about my next Psalm.
Whole counsel of God's word. It has value. No one's questioning any of that. Mm-mm. But when you get here, here's my take. I think Romans had such a vast anchor point.
A two-year anchor point?
Yeah, but it also had it for, like, we were building out the headspace of the author.
Yeah,
you know
what
I'm saying? So it's like...
Yeah, it's denser.
Yeah, and you knew, like, the Yeah, so then like one sermon to build out the one psalm and the perspective. You know what I'm saying? It just, yeah. It seems like it's shorter. It's not as dense. You know what I'm saying? Like
it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that in preparation. Like, first of all, I forgot how to preach on 23 verses at once. And also, like, I don't know. There's just a...
Wait, what?
I forgot
what
to say? I forgot how to preach on 23
no,
verses
bro,
at once.
No, bro, it's hard. Like, it's a dramatic difference. Yeah.
It's like, I got done. I was, like, studying. I was like, well, I've studied the first half of it, you know? And it's like, this is more text than I've taken in years. But, you know, I think also it just... There's a... Because it's a different style of text, the sermons are going to be different. And if you've only ever heard us preach epistles,
yeah,
or if you only ever heard us preach epistles and gospels,
yeah,
then I think it's just going to feel weird no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Man, I think too, like it's not a book. So it feels like a bit of a placeholder. It is a placeholder. It's no problem with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just feels like we're waiting, like I'm at the station. Like we got off a long trip, we're at the station, we're waiting for the next train to come. By the way, hear ye.
Yeah, but it's like you're waiting for the next station while you're eating, like at a five-star restaurant in between kind of thing.
Yeah, help me. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, so I think, you know, part of the joy of like traveling through somewhere is I'm going to travel through here and it's like, I've heard this place is amazing and mm-hmm. you're going to go eat there. Mm-hmm. And I also think that, I think the Psalms, frankly, engages a part of man that is unique, right? Like, and I think that's its intention. Its intention is to attack really more of the whole man. And it also is more prayer or meditation. So for instance, Blake, I think like my Psalm had prayer and meditation. I think yours lent more toward, I'm trying to remember now, just to be honest with you.
It was kind of like,
words
reminding,
of exaltation.
Yeah,
exaltation, but then like reminding the people of God,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah.
And so, like, this psalm, I'm doing Psalm 23 this coming Lord's Day.
This guy,
yeah, I'm doing it. So, here's why I'm doing
takes
it, by the way.
Best one,
no, here, no, let me tell you, it's not
He's
the best.
Like,
Psalm 22
that's
is the best
Sunday.
One.
I love eating this.
Yeah,
place.
Psalm 22 is the best one. Psalm 22 is the best one. Psalm 16 is the second best. And
I think that's what I'm going to preach next, actually.
Psalm what? 16?
Maybe. I don't know.
I changed my mind. I'm doing Psalm 16.
No.
I'm just going to take them all.
Such a jerk.
So the fun story, though, I preached Psalm 16 earlier on in life. And when I preached Psalm 16, that was the day that the Lord converted my brother-in-law. Mm. And that's just one of my favorite stories, just because it was just, he walked
this
up.
This was Psalm 16?
Like, I preached, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, anyway.
I won't preach it now, because I'll just be in my head. And be like,
he'll be tapping.
Well, I wouldn't have done it like that.
But
and mine got results. So.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm playing, Lawson. Gospel
chill.
Call. Anyway, Psalm 23 stolen from us. Yeah. This is what I think. I think Psalm 23 has been stolen from us because everyone reads it at a funeral. And as everyone reads it at a funeral, it's like, this is the most common, maybe more common than John 3:16. I would be surprised if it's not.
Just like Jeremiah 29:11.
100%.
Stolen from us.
It's like, these belong to us. Amen. I want it back.
Amen.
So my goal this week is to take Psalm 23 back. It's ours. It belongs to us. Because I think there are some passages of scripture that we're like, oh, I've read that one 1,000 times. It's like, no.
Yeah. Not like this.
Yeah, it's like, this is God-breathed sacred scripture. Your familiarity with it does not demean its authority.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to take Psalm 23, which is strictly meditative. And here's what I want to work through. You and I have talked about this a little bit, Don. I think that this is helpful. The question is, how does a man who works in a secular field, how does he, while working with his hands, honor the Lord? And it's because in his mind, he is meditating on the things of God.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What Psalm 23 does is give us a paramount picture of what that meditation looks like. David, we don't know the occasion of Psalm 23, but we know that David is meditating upon the lordship of God and is considering what he is like. And he's not even what he's like. He doesn't use a like. He says, the Lord is my shepherd, right? He's the one who cares for me. And so Psalm 23, I think, teaches us how to meditate upon the things of God in a normative fashion, right? Because the vast majority of our people, we've got like, we've got people who work in restaurants. We've got people who work in factories. We've got doctors. We've got all of these different types of people who in their general labors, that they're going to have moments where they can meditate upon the things of God. And I think David demonstrates this just with great excellence in Psalm 23. And for us to go back and say, listen to what David is meditating upon as he's exercising perhaps his kingly role, or perhaps even later on in life, or perhaps he's doing this in the midst of Absalom's rebellion. Like, we don't know where he is. We just simply know that he believes that the Lord is his shepherd and that goodness and mercy will follow him all his days. And so, and even then, like the centrality that he's doing all of this for his own namesake, he's doing it for the namesake of his own glory. So I think it's sweet.
So with that, gentlemen, it's the I Have Friends episode. We did it.
Oh, this was the I
this
Have Friends episode?
This is Look it. Look at us. Yeah. Oh, so in conclusion.
Hey, can I tell you one more thing that I'm going to do an experiment on? I want to say it, that way it's out.
Okay.
All right, so here's my experiment. I think that the way that you dress directly impacts how fruitful your workday is.
I'm with you.
They always say you dress for the job you want.
Right.
The job you have. So here's, that's when you go into an interview.
So here's my scheme. Here's my scheme. I'm planning on doing this for a month. I don't know when I'm going to do it. I got to raise
some
money first.
Are you getting a new suit?
No, here's my plan. My plan is for a month, no blue jeans.
Khaki slacks. Chinos.
So it's got to be slacks or something of the sort.
Yeah.
A button up.
Tucked
all right.
In with a belt.
Yeah.
Huh. Neck shaved.
Yeah.
So it's got to be pressed at the cleaners.
Well, we can talk about that later, but
blazer?
here's
no
what I want to do.
Flare.
No, sincerely, I want to assess the profitability, the fruitfulness of the same hours.
You know what he's doing?
What?
He's just moving us to preaching ribs.
Yeah, he is.
Give me a preaching rib. I told my mom yesterday. I said,
all right, we got to close.
Okay.
We have to hang up.
You can't have a preaching robe in like...
Yeah, not here.
We got to sell it and like buy a cathedral.
All right, so in conclusion,
okay with that.
So in conclusion, I have a Bible verse. Okay. Psalm 133, verse 1, behold how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. So I'd like to thank my fellow elders, Lawson Harlow and Blake McCullough, for the time spent today. Fellas, you are the pork in this barrel episode.
Whoa.
My brothers and my friends, Godspeed.
Amen.
I've never been on social media. Were y'all old enough? MySpace? I wasn't even on MySpace.
Yeah, I was on MySpace.
You were on MySpace? Yeah.
I wasn't allowed.
Yep. I remember. Of course you weren't.
Dad.
He wasn't allowed to do that or play Pokemon.
It's true. I had to hide my Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Whoa.
Really? Real life, though, if I were to forbid any of the like old school things, Yu-Gi-Oh would have been up there.
I don't even know what it was.
What is
Yu-Gi-Oh? I just
Yu-Gi-Oh?
Had a big old
it was a
deck
card
of
game.
Cards.
It just had a lot more mystical, like Egyptian pyramid, that type of thing in it. It was strange to me. But I'll be honest, the card game was fun. But what was I saying? I was saying something about something.
MySpace. Yeah, I was talking about MySpace.
Oh, I remember because you had on your, you could customize that thing pretty well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And top eight friends.
Oh, yeah, the dude. What was his name?
Oh, Tom.
Tom.
That's not what I was dealing with, but the top eight friends, like I remember one day I moved a friend off my top eight friends.
Ooh. And they got you.
Oh, bro, I remember I showed up to school. It was like, it was eighth or ninth grade. I showed up at school. Like I said, I was probably high school. I showed up in ninth grade high to school and they were like, hey, what's going on, man? You moved me off your top eight. And I was like,
it was dark in the bathroom that day. He just saw a cigarette burning in the back, lighting up somebody's face. Hey, you.
Oh,
you will not move me out of your top eight.
I did have T-Mobile, my first phone situation. And we had a Fave 5. Don't know what that is.
It's like Fave a speed,
5 was like
speed dial.
You got free nights and weekends, but if someone was in your Fave 5,
I remember this.
You could always contact them for free.
Oh yeah,
like
I remember
it
that.
Didn't count against your minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had to be real careful. You only edit it like once every couple months.
What did your phone look like?
Oh, it was a flip phone.
Was it a flip phone?
And it had, you could click the button and you would see your Fave 5 and they would rotate. You couldn't have their pictures because there's no camera on the phone, but it would be like their name or whatever.
Yeah. Why didn't we come up with the idea to make the phone have the camera? Like, these are just like...
Duh.
Yeah. These are obvious things.
But they're only duh now. Like, a camera on a phone, why would you need that?
But why wasn't it duh when we were carrying around a flip phone and a digital camera and an MP3 player? You know, like all of those things, we had just like a sack full of things.
Yeah. I remember my tenant, like, so whenever it was time to go on like an away tennis trip, the thing, you had to have your phone, you had to have your iPod. Mm-hmm. And like, I'll never forget my first iPod. I had the, not the like mini, the tiny one. Mm-hmm. But the one that like it was
oh yeah, the brick.
No, I didn't have the brick. My brother had the brick, and my brother filled the brick up
5,000 songs
with like, well, my brother had 40,000 songs on
it. It was like a shoe size.
Yeah, 100%.
Kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I wear 10.
Yeah, here's 40. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Look at that idiot with his little nano.
Yeah, yeah. So it was called the Nano, but there was another one that was slim, and it had like a tiny screen on it, but it had the little circle. It was just really smaller.
I think and that's then called
my,
the Nano.
No, the Nano was the one that was like a clip-on, and it was. I promise.
Search engines.
My cousin.
Speaking of phones,
my cousin gets the Zune.
Yeah, that didn't take off.
And I was like, you know, it's kind of Microsoft.
Were you on Napster?
Yes, I had Napster.
You did?
I remember downloading. I can tell you the
piracy is not a victimless crime.
Yes, I can tell you, like, the commercial
artists are suffering.
I remember the very first
album.
The
one you're talking about, the little baby one, is called a shuffle because you couldn't pick a song.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Checkmate.
Yep. I'm wrong.
I'm just going to start doing that.
I remember the very first album I downloaded, and I remember that it took a solid week to download. Like, I remember my dad had a study, and he had it on his computer. I went into his computer. We downloaded Napster. He was the Napster guy. He was like, Dad loves music. And so I'm like, I can download music and then I can burn
an
it.
An attorney skirting the law. Imagine that.
And at the time.
Lost it. If they catch me, I'll just self-represent.
And if they.
I'm free.
And if they. And at the time, like, the CD burners were like a. Connected them because they weren't like built in yet.
Right. Mm.
And my dad had a stack of discs like this high that were
CDs.
Yes, like
that were blank,
like blank CDs.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so like, I remember having the stack that was like a circle.
Yeah,
they were
a little donut or whatever. Yeah. You raise it up.
There's something to be said for a CD player. Yeah. I don't even think my truck has a CD player.
Probably not.